Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 12, Dhruva Maharaj Goes Back to Godhead. This is text number 7.
Vrnikamam nipayan manogatam
Matastvamautana
pade vishankita
Varam
vararhom bhujanava padayor
Anandaram
tvam vayamanga shushruma
Anantaram tvamvayam mangashushruma
Vrnihi kamam nripayan manogatam
Vrnihi kamam nripayan manogatam
Mattastvam autanapade vishankita
Mattastvam autanapade vishankita
Varam vararhom bhujanabha padayor Anantaram tvam vayamanga shushruma Vrni kamam nripayan manogatam
Mattastvam
auttanapade vishankata
tvam avtana pade vishankita
varam vararhom bhujanabhapadayor
varam vararhom bhujanabhapadayor
anantaram tvam vayam anga shushruma
anantaram tvam vayam anga shushruma
Vrnihi kamam nirpayam manogatam
Mattastvam
autana pade vishankita Varambararhum bhujanabhapadayor
Anantaram tvam vayam anga shushruma
Anantaram tvam vayam anga shushruma Word for word equivalents. Vranihi. Please ask. Kamam.
Kamam.
Desire.
Desire.
Nripa.
Nripa.
O king.
Yat.
Whatever.
Whatever.
Managatam.
Managatam.
Within your mind.
In the mind.
Mata.
Mata.
From me.
From me.
Tvam.
Tvam.
You.
You.
Autanapade.
Autanapade.
O son of Maharaj Uttanapada.
O son of Maharaj Uttanapada.
Avishankita.
Avishankita.
Without hesitation.
Without hesitation.
Varam,
varam
benediction,
benediction.
Vara-arha,
vara-arha,
worthy to take benedictions,
worthy to take benedictions.
Ambuja,
ambuja
lotus flower,
lotus flower.
Nabha,
nabha
whose navel,
whose navel.
Padayo,
padayo
at his lotus feet,
at his lotus feet.
Anantaram,
anantaram
constantly,
constantly.
Tvam,
tvam
about you.
About you.
Vayam.
Vayam.
We.
We.
Anga.
Anga.
Dear Dhruva.
Dear Dhruva.
Shushruma.
Shushruma.
Have heard.
Have heard.
Translation. My dear Dhruva Maharaj, son of Maharaj Uttanapada, we have heard that you are constantly engaged in transcendental loving service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is known for his lotus navel. You are therefore worthy to take all benedictions from us. Please, therefore, ask without hesitation whatever benediction you want from me. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Dhruva Maharaja, the son of King Uttanapada, was already known throughout the universe as a great devotee of the Lord, constantly thinking of his lotus feet. Such a pure, uncontaminated devotee of the Lord is worthy to have all the benedictions that can be offered by the demigods. He does not have to worship the demigods separately for such benedictions. Kubera is the treasurer of the demigods, and he is personally offering whatever benediction Dhruva Maharaj would like to have from him. Srila Bilvamangala Thakur stated, therefore, that for persons who engage in the devotional service of the Lord, all material benedictions wait like maidservants. Mukti Devi is just waiting at the door of the devotee to offer liberation, or more than that, at any time. To be a devotee is therefore an exalted position. Simply by rendering transcendental loving service unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one can have all the benedictions of the world without separate endeavor. Lord Kuvera said to Dhruva Maharaj that he had already heard that Dhruva was always in samadhi, or thinking of the lotus feet of the Lord. In other words, he knew that for Dhruva Maharaj there was nothing desirable within the three material worlds. He knew that Dhruva would ask for nothing but to remember the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord constantly. Om Ajnana Timirantasya Yananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Shvapadantikam Pandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutapad Kamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavam Shcha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Visakhanvitam Shcha He Krishna Kuruna Sindho Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vansha Kalpa Turubhyascha Kripa Sindhobhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivas Adikora Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Vrinihi kamam nripayan manogatam Vattastvamautanapare vishankita Varam varar humbuja navapadayor Anantaram tvam vayam angashushrama Kubera as a kingly demigod, he's the treasurer of the demigods. He wants to offer his benedictions to Dhruva Maharaj. The devotee is so exalted that even the demigods are willing to offer all benedictions to them, all blessings. It's not just because Dhruva Maharaj stopped killing the Yakshas that Kubera wants to give him the benediction. But it's the case that any pure devotee of the Lord attracts the special attention of the demigods. The demigods have knowledge, so they can perceive the factually exalted position of the devotee. The devotee's unique position is explained by Krishna in Bhagavad Gita in the 7th chapter, text 19. Bahunam janmanamante gyanavan mam prapadyante vasudeva sarvamiti sa mahatma sudurlabha. After many births and deaths, he who is actually in knowledge surrenders unto me, knowing me to be the cause of all causes and all that is. Such a great soul is very rare. After many births and deaths, this means that within the human form of life there are so many types of persons, and some of them, only a very few of them, will surrender to Krishna knowing that he's everything. This is a devotee. There are 8,400,000 species of life. None of them, none of the lower species have an opportunity to surrender to Krishna. Only in human form of life is it possible. If you put a dog in the temple, he'll just look for some food or some place to sleep. For example, we used to have a cat in the temple. We used to keep one cat to keep the mice away, which may not be such a bad idea. But this cat couldn't sit in the Bhagavatam class or attend the Mangalarti. In fact, the cat would simply sleep on Prabhupada's lap every night. Mostly is a fortunate cat, no doubt, but mostly cats and dogs are interested in eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Although there are a few outstanding exceptions. I'll just quickly digress into one of those for fun. There was a pig in South India. In the temples in South India, there's a big pillar, which is called Garuda Stampa, which is in front of the temple. And this pig, and it's natural that people would go around, and conventional or traditional for people to circumambulate that pillar for auspiciousness. And one pig came and started circumambulating it furiously, constantly, for hours. It was circumambulating this Garuda Stampa. Then it left. Then it came back the next day and did the same thing. For 3 days it did this, and then it fell down. And it didn't die, but it fell down and like was struggling. And then it left again, and it didn't come back after that. This was on news. I've seen the video. It was in South India, maybe Andhra Pradesh. With that exception, animals are only interested in eating, sleeping, mating, and defending.
Is that on YouTube?
I think so. Yeah. Yeah, pig circumambulates Garuda Stampa. Very wonderful. And of course, some people who are less educated started worshipping the pig as Varaha Dev.
Oh, yeah?
That was not required. but that's there. So a devotee is so fortunate. He has all the opulences of Krishna. To a limited degree, but to such a great degree, more than ordinary people, that he attracts the whole world, including even the demigods. The six opulences are cited by Parasara Muni as strength, beauty, knowledge, wealth, fame, and renunciation. A devotee's strength is that he can control his senses. Therefore, a devotee is called Goswami. And, for example, Srila Prabhupada, we'll use Prabhupada's example probably for all of these. He controlled his own senses, and he controlled the senses of thousands of disciples. Such strength he had. And as far as beauty, he would make arrangements for all kinds of beautiful worship for Krishna. Everything. He would find some way to turn anything into a beautiful offering for Krishna. If you go to the Prabhupada's room in the Radha Damodar temple in India, where he stayed and composed Bhagavatam, translated Bhagavatam in the mornings. It's a very modest little room, but it's still very beautiful. In some way that's hard to explain. It's just beautiful because Prabhupada was there at that time. Wealth. A devotee never is in want of anything. True wealth means that you have enough. You don't need anything more. You're not craving something else. So a devotee, whether he has everything or he has nothing, he's completely happy. This is a sentiment is expressed by Bali Maharaj. When, by Vamandev, sorry. When Bali Maharaj offered Vamandev a benediction, he said, "I'll give you anything you want." And Vamandev said, "I just want 3 steps of land." Bali Maharaj was confused and he was laughing in his confusion. "What is this? I could offer you the whole world." But Vamandev said, "If I'm not satisfied with 3 steps of land, I won't be satisfied with the 3 worlds. So a devotee is satisfied with what he has because he knows that if you start wanting one thing, you'll start to want more and more. And it just accelerates and it never stops.
Why do you think he just as a joke or what?
That's very beautiful. I never even considered that. That's very beautiful. And he would, in fact, have both. The Lord is extremely cunning. Knowledge. Devotee has full knowledge of Veda, Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. This is the opulence of knowledge. Prabhupada said, I am not a scientist, but I am the guru of scientists. So he has such knowledge. And renunciation. A devotee, despite all of these opulences, is completely humble. Devotee can always chant the holy name of the Lord because he thinks himself as insignificant as a straw that's there in the street. And he can tolerate all kinds of provoking situations, like a tree. Therefore, he's not disturbed. He's not disturbed by fear or by anchoring. Srimad Bhagavatam goes into even more detail about the exalted qualities of a devotee. In fifth canto, it says one of the prayers of the residents of Jambudvip is Yas yasti bhaktir bhagavatya kinchana sarvayur gunais tatra sama sate sura Harab bhaktasya kuto mahadguna manoratin nasati dhavato bahi. All the demigods and their exalted qualities, such as religion, knowledge, and renunciation, become manifest in the body of one who has developed unalloyed devotion for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva. On the other hand, a person devoid of devotional service and engaged in material activities has no good qualities. Even if he is adept at the practice of mystic yoga or the honest endeavor of maintaining his family and relatives, he must be driven by his own mental speculations and must engage in the service of the Lord's external energy. How can there be any good qualities in such a man? In the purport to this powerful verse, Prabhupada quotes 26 qualities found in a Vaishnava. He's kind. He's very kind to everyone. He does not make anyone his enemy. He's truthful. He's equal to everyone. No one can find any fault in him. He's magnanimous. He's mild. He's always clean. He's without possessions. He works for everyone's benefit. Interestingly, that works for everyone's benefit is the meaning of the Sanskrit word purohit, which means priest. Puro is a person. And hita means welfare or benefit, to protect or to maintain. So purohit is one who puts the welfare of others first. He's very peaceful. He's always surrendered to Krishna. He has no material desires. He's very meek. He's steady. He controls his senses. He does not eat more than required. He is not influenced by the Lord's illusory energy. He offers respect to everyone. He does not desire any respect for himself. He is very grave. He's merciful. He's friendly. He's poetic. He's expert. And he's silent. Those are the 26 qualities mentioned by Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj, which Prabhupada quotes in that purport of Srimad Bhagavatam. So, it's another point in this purport is that at the end, it was a little surprising when I read it first that Kubera knew very well that Dhruva Maharaj would not ask for any benediction, even though he offered them. So the question arose in my mind yesterday as I was preparing for this class, why does a demigod offer benedictions to a devotee if he knows the devotee won't ask for anything? It shouldn't just be some two-dimensional exercise, some custom. the relationship of a devotee and a demigod can be fruitfully seen on two different levels, on the absolute level and relative level. On the absolute plane of spiritual consciousness, Krishna consciousness, the devotee is more exalted than the demigod. A devotee has fully surrendered to Krishna. He has no personal motivation, no ambition. Even though on the relative plane, a demigod has more strength, more responsibility, more opulence than a devotee. So these are the two different levels. On one level, then that relationship standing as it does, that it can be best viewed from these two relationships, these two platforms, it benefits us. It's important for us to clearly see the interaction between devotees and demigods from these two perspectives as well. From a relative point of view, what is the function of a demigod? He accepts sacrifices and offers benedictions. This relationship, conventional relationship, based on that responsibility of the demigods, is described in Bhagavad Gita, saying that from yajna, rain comes. From rain, grain comes. Like that. This world is being maintained by a cycle of sacrifices. The condition of the world is regulated. This means that it's going to rain no matter what, but that rain will be perfect if there's a regular cycle of sacrifices going on earth by people. When we stop doing that, things become irregular and chaotic. So from this relative point of view, the demigod naturally wants to offer a benediction to the devotees because of his duty. So what is the sacrifice that the devotees have performed? They perform Sankirtan Yajna, the Yuga Dharma, which is the sacrifice for this age of chanting the holy names of the Lord in congregation, spreading the glories of Krishna. The demigods are nothing but the arms and legs of the Lord, as we heard in yesterday's verse. So by pleasing Krishna, automatically the demigods are satisfied. There's no need to separately worship them. So as a matter of duty, they want to offer this benediction to the devotees. And yet, this understanding is not complete, because it does not take into account the exalted position of the devotee. You see, in the first example, the demigod is on top. And as a matter of duty, as with any other person, he's offering benedictions to an inferior person who has performed a sacrifice, in this case, Sankirtan Yajna. They're not concerned with the exalted position of the devotee. So this is relative. It's bodily. From bodily position, the demigod is more exalted than a devotee. But we need to take into account the exalted position of a devotee. And when we do that, the relationship shifts so that the devotee is in the superior position. And now the demigod is in a humble position and wants to serve the devotee by offering the benediction. Why would he do this? Although the demigods are not always counted as pure devotees, still they're pious, and they want the favor of Krishna. Krishna who maintains and empowers them. They want his favor. So they've heard from Krishna that by serving my devotees, you please me the most. More than pleased serving me directly. I'm more happy. Just like a father, if you are walking down the street and you see a father and son walking also, if you say something nice to the father, okay, he may smile. But if you say something nice to the father's son, now you have his attention. In the same way, Krishna gives his attention to those who serve his devotees. And the demigods know this, therefore they're offering this benediction to Dhruva Maharaj for the spiritual absolute platform, from that platform, for the purpose of pleasing Krishna.
So why do the devotees not accept the benedictions?
So the devotees are... I do intend to address that at the end.
Oh.
There's one more point, though, about the demigods themselves. They have there's another absolute reason why the demigods offer these benedictions. In addition to simply pleasing Krishna, the demigods know that when they descend to this earth planet, there will be a lot of attention. Imagine it. We just looked out the window and there's Kubera. Right? Everyone would be paying attention. And in fact, it will most likely be documented in Shastra that when they appear. It's that important. So, taking advantage of having the attention of all of humankind, they want to set an example for all humanity of how to serve a devotee according to your own capacity. So what's the demigod's capacity to offer benedictions in exchange for the yajna? So they're offering benedictions here as an example for all of humankind how to serve the devotee according to your capacity. And the second example is how, if you as a practicing devotee, so first, the first example was for the general world population. The second example is for the devotees particularly. If you as a devotee or practicing devotee are offered a benediction, how should you reply? How should you respond? So these are both spiritual reasons why a demigod may offer a benediction to a devotee, even though he knows the devotee won't ask for anything. So I appreciate the question also. Why? Why should a devotee not ask for a benediction? Actually, he only asks for to remember the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord constantly. It's not that he asks for nothing, but he asks only for pure devotional service to Krishna. Which is almost like not asking for anything for two reasons. One, they already are worshipping Krishna. Only out of humility might they ask that, as if they weren't already constantly remembering Krishna. On the second hand, even if they did were in need of remembering Krishna, as if they could not, that can't be given to you by somebody else. In the case of the demigods, for example, they themselves are not constantly absorbed in remembering the lotus feet of Krishna. So they won't ask. It's almost like they're not asking for anything, because anyway, I can't give you that. That is only the mercy of the Vaishnavas who can give you that. Not just anyone can give you that, only the Vaishnavas. So what we can take from this is how we should serve the devotees to our capacity. The demigods offer benedictions. We don't have to walk around offering benedictions to the devotees. Please ask from me anything. If we do that, what can we actually offer? Perhaps if we have some opulence, we can do that. But generally, I don't have anything I can offer if I walk around doing that. So we find something we do have and offer that sincerely to the devotees. And that's following in the example here of Kuvera. It's a good example. Painter may paint for Krishna. Like that. Offer a painting as a gift. I sometimes offer paintings as gifts. Other people cook for Krishna, and everyone appreciates that the most. If there's first-class prasad to the devotees, they're very happy. Or even if you just have a block of tilak, you can give tilak as a gift, something. Or a kind Krishna-conscious word, something to encourage the person. It can be very simple, but it should be according to our means. And the other example to learn from this is how if someone offers us anything, we should be conscious that this thing should help us remember Krishna. We should be Krishna conscious in our desire, our requests, especially from other devotees. This will strengthen our bond. Otherwise, if we ask for something independent of Krishna consciousness, it may put something between us. It may focus our attention on that thing rather than the relationship. Is that okay?
The devotee never allowed some bad. Prabhupada says that devotees sometimes accept things as a gift for the sake of engaging whatever that thing is in Krishna consciousness. When does the devotee decide when it's okay and when it isn't to accept something?
Mm.
Or is it just that it's when? I mean, I think the result is pretty much the same. The gift in question is to do something for Krishna, but sometimes they accept and that means something, and sometimes they don't accept and that means something else.
It depends on what your service is. Srila Prabhupada sometimes accepted things which were not required, just to accept the offering of love in 26th Second Avenue. One homeless alcoholic man came in and interrupted the lecture and said that you didn't have any toilet paper, so I brought you the toilet paper, and kind of stumbled in and brought it in there, and he said, "See you later, Swami," and then closed the door. And Prabhupada said, just see, even though his mind is not in order, he wanted to render some service. So that was nice. Prabhupada didn't use toilet paper, but still he accepted it. That was nice. Because there's nothing harmful in accepting that. It didn't affect his service in any way. There's no problem for him to accept that. However, when there was some visa issue where Prabhupada didn't have his visa set up and he might have had to go back to India before he was ready, some of the female disciples said, one of the female disciples said, "Then I'll just marry you, Swamiji," so that for visa's sake. And for that, in the case of that gift offered, Prabhupada said, "I'm a sannyasi. I cannot do that." So, not that he just accepts everything. There are bounds, and those bounds are defined by one's service. His service as a sannyasi prevented that from being possible. But everything was explained why he made the choices he made, so that things would not be speculated on. I can't do this. Why? Because I'm a sannyasi. Yeah. But in any case, he accepts the love behind the offering. That makes some sense.
Anything else? Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.